policy governor has outlined any program of policy so forth, I don't know. See, there's a bunch of commissions up there the governor will issue in making appointments. I countersign those commissions. I've never had a conference with him in my life about who he's going to appoint and why he's appointing and all that kind of stuff. It just seems to be none of my business, and it ain't, so.
How big a factor is television in all this change? People that
how big? I don't know. I just know it's tremendous. But as another thing, everybody got their own idea. I think it in the last campaign, I think if Skipper Bowles had just simply canceled about half of his TV programs, that he'd been in better shape. I think you can get too much exposure. Now, if you're sitting in your living room, and that every day you get to a place where the, just like I can't believe I ate the whole thing, but everybody heard and talked about it, you don't hear that anymore. It wore itself out. You won't ever hear that again on TV. It just simply wore itself out. All right, now every day when you come in and you listen to some news program, maybe right in the middle of a news program, some of these stations have it regular fixed at maybe 6 o'clock in the evening, 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock in the day, some other time. Some of the radio stations on the hour, every hour. But you got to sit there and know what the news is and see for several days a candidate for governor standing at the mill shaking hands with the workers in the pass through. Just keep seeing that. After a while, you just going to get fed up. If he'd have canceled, I'm talking about Skipper Bowles now, if he'd just canceled about half of that, he'd been in better shape. Just exactly like, I can't believe I ate the whole thing. It ran out. So, timing is the most important thing in politics, is timing. It's just like learning to use a surfboard and the waves and ocean. You hit it right, you come right on in. You hit it right by the slammy the bottom of the ocean. Now, of course, there's nobody been an expert on timing. Nobody. A whole lot of people just been mighty lucky on time. And there's some of the reasons why that you never know what the psychology is. You never know. You never make a horseshoe out of a stick of steel. You're never going to make that if you don't do it when it's red hot. You let it cool off and you're not going to do anything.
Which governor do you think has had the most lasting influence on the state?
The ones I've been with? Most lasting. They tell you the truth, they forget them so fast. And you sit down and ask the average person now, say, well, what are some of the highlights of the Cherry administration? What are some of the highlights of the Coscott administration, the Broughton administration? What are some of the highlights of the Eringhouse administration? How many answers you think you'd get? They forget them so soon. Now, the man who knew, and when I'm talking about politics and people, the man who knew more about handling people than anybody I've seen in the governor's office was Senator Huey, Clyde R. Huey. In my opinion, he knew more about how to handle people than any man that I've seen sitting in the governor's office. And I want to give you a little illustration about that. It used to be that the governor made engagements to see groups who want to come to Raleigh and discuss programs and give vent to their feelings about, and make complaints and ask favors and so forth. And the governor would come and stay in his office. Unusual for him to be away. Maybe he'd take just maybe a few days a month he'd make an engagement in different areas of the state, you know, on important occasions. He'd stay in his office. People come see him. And I've seen the day right here when there'd be four or five groups of people out here in the corridors and in the rotunda of the Capitol waiting for their turn to see the governor. Very few people come to Raleigh now to see the governor. They're notified in advance about what it is they want to see about. He's directed to see Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so. That's who he goes to see. Everybody knows that's so because of all of the engagement, the present-day governor, last several. And it's a format that they fall into. When it got started, others had to follow it. Going to some sort of small occasion, you know, if it don't, it's just terrible. And you feel like you got to go, and you go. Well, the work is going on. Here with the governor in the country, and then Russia, and so forth, every day or so, you see where he's naming somebody for office and making appointments right here in the state. He's in Russia. Government's going on. And it's being done by somebody else. It's got to be so. Now, like it used to be, because when I first came to Raleigh, all the governmental buildings were right around Capitol Square. You just walk off the square and go to a building and see some other agency. Knew them all personally. But the time I'm talking about is one group waiting for their turn to see the governor, for their hour. And they came sitting right here, this way you sit in this office. And they were unloading their burdens on me about some complaint they had about what was going on in that area. The governor could do something about it. And of course, I hope very much the governor could do something about it, sympathize with them all, could. And so I said, well, now, if you don't mind when you finish with the governor, if you don't mind, if you have time, you drop by here and see how you got along. Well, it did. After a while, it came by here, feeling good, entirely different attitude what they demonstrated when they first came, he said. And so we talked a while. So, by the way, he said, how'd you get along with the governor? Is he going to help you any? Well, he just laughed. He said, you know, my George, didn't even talk to him about it. So we got in there. Says he's just the finest man I ever saw in my life. He was telling me about some of his problems and so forth and what he had to contend with and how well he's handling this great big program and so forth and about another one he's going to get into right away and what great benefit it would be to the state. He said he's a marvelous man. So we didn't talk to him about our little affair. Now that's knowing how to just when to grab the ball and what play to call. And whether he carried himself, let somebody else carry. He knew how to handle people. That crowd went back home satisfied and was praising him, all their friends. What a great governor we had. But before they came up here to see him, they were giving him hell because he won't do this, won't do that. Got him, didn't even talk to him about what they came to talk to him about. Isn't that marvelous?
That's a good story.
What'd you say?
I said, that's a good story.
I've never seen another one able to do it. If it did, I never heard about it.
I was thinking in terms of which governor's programs have had the most impact on the state. That might be which governor's administration and program have had the most impact in North Carolina.
Well, you get back farther in time you want to talk about.
I say in this last 30 years.
Well, that'd be hard to say because I've been working on every one of them since. But the heaviest impact the people of this state seen was the proposals that were promulgated, and he drove them through, was Max Gardner. Oh, Max Gardner. And see, he came in, that was during the National Republican Administration. It's Hoover Administration. See, he was elected in 1928. But he set up our highway system, where we had county highway commissions and all the counties. He set that up. He consolidated the University of North Carolina. It's his program. He advocated responsible for the Australian ballot, the secret ballot in this state. Now, things like that, something you can't get away from. Well, that started with Max Gardner. Well, every one of them, we've had election reforms, we've had Corrupt Practices Act, and of course we've had many highway commissions, and we keep on building roads, and we keep on bringing new institutions into the greater University of North Carolina. Now we've got a university system, we've got community colleges, but it's been expanding. But it all started right there with Max Gardner. Great program. Now you see, with all that educational program and so forth, you see now Terry Sanford's going to go down as an educational governor. There weren't very much that Max Gardner could do about getting money. One, he was practically driven to what he did. It was such a great accomplishment because there weren't any money during his administration. Just weren't any. He kept this state from issuing scrip to school teachers when it was being issued by every state that I know about. He was able to get people with money in this state to go to New York and personally help borrow money. Some banks didn't want to borrow money, and there were some financiers in the state that had money in their banks that you lend it to them, I withdraw my account right now. And this state went ahead and paid every teacher on something other than scrip, no scrip position. That's hard days. So you don't forget those sort of things. But you see, as we move along in government, and all you got to do is just look right here and see the expansion of government and space required to administer it. Because of increasing governmental demands and increasing population. It's been a mighty few years that we stood still, population-wise. And people are amazed when they come and go to these old legislative chambers up behind and to realize that that's where all the laws were enacted. Out of space in the world for committee hearing, out of space for stenographers or anything else. Not but one way to get in or out of either of the chambers, and that's just one door. And yet when this capitol was built, our forefathers started to work immediately after the old state house burned in 1831 to build a structure here to take care of the needs of government in this state for all time to come. And to locate the executive branch on the first floor, the legislative branch on the second floor, and the Supreme Court judicial branch on the third floor. There were two big rooms up there. One was the library and the other was the Supreme Court hearing room. They thought they'd take care of the needs of government for all time to come. Then for a long period of time, a building, you know, it went around the square here. Now you won't find another new building to be built around the square. It's all going down. And about an 18-story high-rise complex straddling Halifax Street, right close to Peace College, and a whole governmental center going down the way. They thought it was a foolish thing to have all that legislative building down there. How long ago? just 10 years ago. And now they're hollering for another building for office space. And go in there and take partition out of rooms so that the members can use the two rooms rather than one they got now. Going down in the basement and making offices out of space that was planned for park and automobiles just 10 years ago. So there's no end to it. There's no end to it. I don't know what to be doing just 10 years from now.
How did you manage to get reelected all these times? You're a secret you haven't told somebody?
Well, I'll tell you.
Haven't you been reelected more times than any other statewide official
In
the country?
Yeah. I've been Dean of the Secretary of State of the United States since 1961. Well, I can tell you two or three things why. I try to do my job. I've never fooled with anybody else's campaign. After the nominations, then I'd work just as hard for my ticket as I'd work for myself. I've never wavered from the Democratic Party. That's my party. If I can't support my party, I can't expect my party to support me. That door you see right there hasn't been closed day or night for 37 years. I had one governor to come in here and wanted to have a conference with me, and just about half seated with hands on the chair, arm, sit down. He looked at the door and didn't sit down, but went to close the door. He said, "Please don't close that door. If it's that important, if you want closed, I'll go down to your office." His office down there. Nobody has ever visited this corner of this building. No matter what I was doing, how busy I was, how important it was, and left, went back home, said he couldn't get to see me. Tried to take care of my correspondence. And then, if there's another official in all of state government, when all these hordes of school children come to Raleigh every spring of the year before commencement time, you can find 30 or 40 buses sometime parked anywhere they can get. Never been a group here try to get in here, didn't come all the way in, every one of them, and I talked to them, told them something about government. And before they left, I'd tell them, I said, "Now, when you get back home, the first thing I want you to do is remember me to your papas and mamas." And I think they've been doing it. I don't know. Nobody has any secret or nothing. Any secret? No, nobody's got any secret.
Anything you do differently?
No, you just do the best you can. That's all you can do. You never make a horseshoe out of a stick of steel. You're never going to make that if you don't do it when it's red hot. You let it cool off and you're not going to do anything.
Which governor do you think has had the most lasting influence on the state?
The ones I've been with? Most lasting. They tell you the truth, they forget them so fast. You sit down and ask the average person now, say, "Well, what are some of the highlights of the Cherry administration? What are some of the highlights of the Coscott administration, the Brogdon administration? What are some of the highlights of the Ehringhaus administration?" How many answers you think you'd get? They forget them so soon. Now, the man who knew when I'm talking about politics and people. The man who knew more about handling people than anybody I've seen in the governor's office was Santa Huey, Clyde R. Huey. In my opinion, he knew more about how to handle people than any man that I've seen sitting in the governor's office. And I want to give you a little illustration about that. It used to be that the governor made engagements to see groups who want to come to Raleigh and discuss programs and give vent to their feelings about, and make complaints and ask favors and so forth. And the governor would come and stay in his office. Unusual for him to be away. Maybe he'd take just maybe a few days a month, he'd make an engagement in different areas of the state, you know, an important occasion. He'd stay in his office. People come see him. And I've seen the day right here when there'd be four or five groups of people out here in the corridors and in the rotunda of the Capitol waiting for their turn to see the governor. Very few people come to Raleigh now to see the governor. They're notified in advance about what it is they want to see about. He's directed to see Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so. That's who he goes to see. Everybody knows that's so because of all of the engagement, the present-day governor, last several. And it's a format that they fall into. When it got started, others had to follow it. Going to some sort of small occasion, you know, if it don't, it's just terrible. And you just you feel like you got to go, and you go. Well, the work is going on. Here with the governor in the country, and then Russia, and so forth. Every day or so, you see where he's naming somebody for office and making appointments right here in the state. He's in Russia. Government's going on. If it's being done by somebody else, it's got to be so. Now, like it used to be, of course, when I first came to Raleigh, all the governmental buildings were right around Capitol Square. You just walk off the square and go in a building and see some other agency. Knew them all personally. But the time I'm talking about is one group waiting for their turn to see the governor, their hour. And they came sitting right here, this way you're sitting in this office. And they were unloading their burdens on me about some complaint they had about what was going on in that area. The governor could do something about it. And of course, I hope very much the governor could do something about it, sympathize with them all, could. And so I said, well, now, if you don't mind, when you finish with the governor, if you don't mind, if you have time, you drop by here and see how you got along. Well, it did. After a while, it came by here, feeling good, entirely different attitude than what they demonstrated when they first came, he said. And so we talked a while. So, by the way, he said, how'd you get along with the governor? Is he going to help you any? Well, he laughed. He said, you know, my George, didn't even talk to him about it. So we got in there. Says he's just the finest man I ever saw in my life. Was telling me about some of his problems and so forth and what he had to contend with and how well he's handling this great big program and so forth and about another one he's going to get into right away, what great benefit would be to the state. He said he's a marvelous man. So we didn't even talk to him about our little affair. Now that's knowing how to just when to grab the ball and what play to call. And whether he carried himself, let somebody else carry. He knew how to handle people. That crowd went back home satisfied and was praising him, all their friends. What a great governor we had. But before they came up here to see him, they were giving him hell because he won't do this, won't do that. Got him, didn't even talk to him about what he came to talk to him about. Isn't that marvelous?
That's a good story.
What you say?
I said, that's a good story.
I've never seen another one able to do it. If it did, I never heard about it.
I was thinking in terms of which governor's programs have had the most impact on the state. That might be a... Which governance administration and programs that had the most impact in North Carolina?
Well, you'll get back farther in time you want to talk about.
I say in this period, the last 30 years.
Then, well, that'd be hard to say because I've been working on every one of them since. But the heaviest impact the people of this state seen was the proposals that were promulgated, and he drove them through, was Max Gardner. Oh, Max Gardner. And see, he came in, that was during the National Republican Administration, the Hoover Administration. See, he was elected in 1928. But he set up our highway system, where we had county highway commissions and all the counties. He set that up. He consolidated the University of North Carolina. That's his program. He advocated responsible for the Australian ballot, secret ballot. Now, things like that's something you can't get away from. Well, that started with old Max Gardner. Well, every one of them, we've had election reforms, we've had Corrupt Practices Act, and of course we've had many highway commissions, and we keep on building roads, and we keep on bringing new institutions into the greater University of North Carolina. Now we've got a university system, we've got community colleges, but it's been expanding. But it all started right there with Max Gardner. Great program. Now you see, with all that educational program and so forth, you see now Terry Sanford's going to go down as an educational governor. There weren't very much that Max Gardner could do about getting money. One, he was practically driven to what he did. It was such a great accomplishment because there weren't any money during his administration. Just weren't any. He kept this state from issuing scrip to school teachers. It was being issued by every state that I know about. He was able to get people with money in this state to go to New York and personally help borrow money. Some banks didn't want to borrow money, and there were some financiers in the state that had money in their bank, said, "You lend it to them, I withdraw my account right now." And the state went ahead and paid every teacher on something other than scrip, no scrip position. That's how that is. So you don't forget those sort of things. But you see, as we move along in government, and all you got to do is just look right here and see the expansion of government and space required to administer it. It's because of increasing governmental demands and increasing population. It's been a mighty few years that we've stood still, population-wise. And people are amazed when they come and go to these old legislative chambers up behind and to realize that that's where all the laws were enacted, not a space in the world for a committee hearing, not a space for stenographers or anything else, not but one way to get in or out of either of the chambers, and that's just one door. And yet when this Capitol was built, our forefathers started to work immediately after the old state house burned in 1831 to build a structure here to take care of the needs of government in this state for all time to come. And to locate the executive branch on the first floor, the legislative branch on the second floor, and the Supreme Court judicial branch on the third floor. There were two big rooms up there. One was the library and the other was the Supreme Court hearing room. They thought they'd take care of the needs of government for all time to come. Then for a long period of time, a building, you know, it went around the square here. Now you won't find another new building to be built around the square. It's all going down. We have about an 18-story high-rise complex straddling Halifax Street, right close to Peace College, and a whole governmental center going down the way. They thought it was a foolish thing to have all that legislative building down there. How long ago? Just 10 years ago. And now they're hollering for another building for office space. And go in there and take partition out of rooms so that the members can use the two rooms rather than one they got now. Going down in the basement and making offices out of space that was planned for parking automobiles 10 years ago. So no end to it. No end to it. I don't know what to be doing just 10 years from now.
How did you manage to get reelected all these times? Is there a secret you haven't told somebody?
Well, I'll tell you.
Haven't you been reelected more times than any other statewide official in the country?
Yeah. I've been Dean of the Secretary of State of the United States since 1961. Well, I can tell you two or three things why. I try to do my job. I've never fooled with anybody else's campaign. After the nominations, then I'd work just as hard for my ticket as I'd work for myself. I've never wavered from the Democratic Party. That's my party. If I can't support my party, I can't expect my party to support me. That door you see right there hasn't been closed day or night for 37 years. Had one governor to come in here and wanted to have a conference with me, and just about half seated with hands on the chair, arm, sit down. He looked at the door and didn't sit down, but went to close the door. I said, "Please don't close that door. If it's that important, if you want closed, I'll go down to your office." His office down. Nobody's ever visited this corner of this building. No matter what I was doing, how busy I was, how important it was, and left, went back home, said he couldn't get to see me. Tried to take care of my correspondence. And then, if there's another official in all the state government, when all these hordes of school children come to Raleigh every spring of the year before commencement time, you can find 30 or 40 buses sometime parked anywhere they can get. Never been a group here try to get in here, didn't come all the way in, every one of them, and I talked to them, tell them a little something about government. And before they left, I'd tell them, I said, "Now, when you get back home, the first thing I want you to do is remember me to your papas and mamas." And I think they've been doing it. I don't know. Nobody has any secret. No, nobody's got any secret.
Anything you do differently?
No, you just do the best you can. That's all you can do. In other words, it didn't take me long to tell you whether I could see you today or thing I had to look, I had some lady here, was in at 2:30, and I got back from the house. My wife is sick, and I had to go home and fix a little something for her to eat, and then wash the dishes, put them all back in place before I came back down here. And that lady, two of them, that lady was in here, a little after 2. So I sent her back to Charlotte. All you can do is just do the best you can. That's all.
I think I told you we'd like to talk to you about an hour. As far as North Carolina politics are concerned.
Well, I know less about North Carolina politics than anybody can talk to.
Well,
who in the world ever thought that Richard Nixon would lose the governorship in California like he did, and then talk to the press like he did, and then come back and get the vote he did? The president.
As a matter of fact, all of the experts
state capitol last.
We need to describe the atmosphere in Urey's office. Big marble front fireplace with large brass andirons.
The doorways were large marble kinds of the high ceilings.
High ceilings. Confederate Veterans Association certificate on the wall.
The spittoons were removed last week.